Well, good day. We are going to talk about the 1920s today and maybe put it in a couple lectures for you because it's such an important time. You can think about the 1920s as just a national big breath after the great calamity of the war to end all wars, or the Great War, or what will later be understood as World War I. One thing to think about is that every president in the 1920s is going to have a slogan. Every president is going to generally believe in something called the business cycle, where there are natural ups and downs in the economy, and they will generally have a quote, laissez-faire attitude towards it. Remember that Thomas Jefferson had used the term laissez-faire, or believed that the government that governs best governs least. That philosophy really transcended over into economics during this particular time. It wasn't straight up laissez-faire. There will be, some congressional aid to farmers during this time. There will be some relief handed out to people who were transitioning from war to back to public life. But generally, think about it. That's a great historical argument, the 1920s and laissez-faireism. But for our purposes, remember that all the presidents in the 1920s believed in the business cycle. All the presidents in the 1920s were more against government getting involved in the economy. And those philosophies alone are going to go a long way to set up the eventual Great Depression that takes up the next decade following the 20s. Another way to think about the 1920s is that economically, the decade is a lot like the 1980s decade. In both, you'll have a major economic downturn. You'll have escapism, you'll have materialism, and you'll generally have America trying to define itself, following a period of great struggle, or in Ronald Reagan's case in the 1980s, at the end of a great struggle, like the Cold War. But back to the 1920s, Warren G. Harding, when he becomes president, in the election of 1920, which was the first political election to have election returns broadcast on radio, and it was also the first election where women across the board could vote as a result of the 19th Amendment. Warren G. Harding will be elected in 1920, and his phrase was that he wanted a return to normalcy in government. Normalcy meant, hey, the economy's running well, that America continues an isolationist track on foreign policy. And let's remember something. Nobody wants to see another war like the Great War at this time. The United States had been relatively fortunate in the Great War, only to lose about 116,000 casualties, as opposed to Britain and France, who lose 1 million men in the first year of the war. So a big push as part of this normalcy on the foreign policy side was disarmament. And, there was an idea that, hey, if we can stop the mechanisms for war starting, then we won't see another great war. We won't see American boys having to go to Europe again. So early in the 1920s, there was something called the Washington Naval Conference. This was headed up by Secretary of State Charles Evans Hughes. And the Washington Naval Conference was focused on disarmament. In other words, the theory behind it was if you had less weapons, then somehow you would have less war. So the Washington Naval Conference does lead to things like the Five-Power Naval Treaty and the Nine-Power Naval Treaty that essentially did reduce the number of things like battleships in an effort to stop another war from happening. The problem was, this looked really good on paper, but it's not necessarily going to solve how war starts. Later in 1928-29, you had the Kellogg-Briand Treaty. And this was signed by over 28 countries, and this was a pledge to outlaw war. The problem is that the economic downturns in places like Germany are going to greatly outweigh any kind of push for peace during this particular time. Again, from one of our previous lectures, the thought that the Treaty of Versailles had been too tough by, you know, the 1930s is also going to lead to the rise of things like the National Socialist Party in Germany, and ultimately to the rise of Hitler. America returned to a largely isolationist position, and the fear was that immigration to America had caused World War I. So one of the big things that you're going to see in the 1920s is the first Red Scare, a situation where foreigners are going to be looked at especially. Remember that Russia had gone communist in 1917. And that's going to be an issue for us during the Red Scare. You know, there were three bad words for people living in the 19-teens and 20s. And one was socialist, one was anarchist, and one was communist. And what you see by the 19-teens and early 20s is the rise of a political philosophy known as anarchists and anarchism. One of the things that will happen is that A. Mitchell Palmer, the Attorney General of the United States, will basically begin to target immigrants. And if I can just give you a quick fact on that. One of the things that will happen is that A. Mitchell Palmer will have a bomb go off at his house on what is today Embassy Row in Washington, D.C. And in his yard, as forensics are becoming more important, investigators find a bit of newsprint, and that newsprint is from an anarchist newspaper. So A. Mitchell Palmer in 1920 will do the Palmer Raids, and these will be raids in 33 cities. There'll be thousands of arrests. People will be held without bail. And approximately 600 Americans will be deported for being un-American. And this is a good example of the Red Scare. Another example is in the following year, 1921, two Italian immigrants, Sacco and Vanzetti, near Boston, will be arrested. The Sacco and Vanzetti case becomes the case of the 1920s. Ultimately, these two gentlemen will be executed in 1927. Some suggest simply because they were immigrants or anarchists. But history tells us that at least one of those gentlemen was guilty. But this became a worldwide case, the Sacco and Vanzetti case. Good example of the Red Scare, good example of America trying to stay isolated during this particular time. And also, this is a great time for a new organization, the Ku Klux Klan. The Ku Klux Klan was against anybody who was not a WASP, and WASP stood for White Anglo-Saxon Protestant. So remember, in our discussion on Reconstruction a while back, the Ku Klux Klan was considered the ghost of the Confederacy. They were there to intimidate blacks from voting. Remember the cartoon by Thomas Nast, Worse Than Slavery, you know, which had a Klansman in it. Now the Ku Klux Klan is against Jewish peoples and Catholic people, anybody who's not a Protestant. They're against immigrants, you know, the new immigrants from Eastern Europe. And in the mid-1920s, Klansmen will march on Washington, D.C., and that will be a big deal. We're going to find that the 1920s is just a heyday for the Ku Klux Klan. As far as labor goes, you know, there was, as America shifts from guns back to butter, you know, from wartime manufacturing to regular manufacturing, there'll be a lot of wartime inflation. And this inflation laid people off, defense industries closed. You know, one of the things after the Great War is that there were no safety nets for anybody. The, you know, women, some women left the factory, other women did not, but they'll be replaced by men coming home from the war. There'll be tension in the workplace as American manufacturing shifts back from guns to butter. There were three major strikes in 1919, the year following the war: the Boston police strike, the U.S. steel strike, and the coal miner strike. The American labor movement, although it was growing, was kind of weakened during this time for fear of, anarchism, socialism, and communism. John L. Lewis becomes the new president of the United Mine Workers Union, and he will later work with Franklin Roosevelt to improve labor. Right now, there's the open shop system, which meant that, right now was the closed shop system, and what that meant was that you almost had to join the union to get the job. We're going to see later, after World War II, during President Truman's time, that the closed shop is replaced by the open shop with something called the Taft-Hartley Act of about 1947. So Warren G. Harding, somewhat of a hands-off president, wants us to return to normalcy. Normalcy is another word for isolationism. And Harding serves about 3 years. He's elected in 1920, but he dies of a heart attack in 1923. Harding is a member of the Ohio Gang, a group of Ohio politicians. And one of the biggest scandals in the Harding administration is the Teapot Dome scandal. You know, one of the things that Harding would say, if he lived to evaluate his presidency, is he would say that the appointing of his friends really hurt his administration. And a great example of this is the Teapot Dome scandal, where Albert Fall, F-A-L-L, is put in charge of the Interior Department, and he ends up illegal leasing government oil fields to the highest bidder. And this is really embarrassing to the Harding administration. Now, how does Harding get out of this? He dies. Not a popular way to escape a scandal, but he dies of a heart attack. You know, for years, Harding's numbers were down because of the Teapot Dome scandal. But what other things did Harding do during his administration? The Washington Naval Conference was a big deal with Charles Evans Hughes. Also, he established the Office of Management and Budget. So, you know, the country was trying to become a little bit more balanced economically, okay? But Calvin Coolidge will replace Warren G. Harding. Calvin Coolidge's phrase is "keep cool with Coolidge." Another one of his phrases was "the business of America is business." And he would say once that he who owns a factory owns a temple, and the people who come to work in that factory, they come to worship. The business of America is business. Here's a guy who liked to have his head rubbed with Vaseline. He loved to ride his mechanical horse before supper time. And he was rumored never to really have said more than any three words to any one person at any one time. But he does say a wonderful thing. He says the purpose of the president is not necessarily to pass all the good laws, but to veto the possible bad laws. I like that. I think that is a good expression of some of the thinking. Okay, and Calvin Coolidge's time, in a lot of ways, economically, is compared to William Jefferson Clinton's time. Money was good. People had some confidence. And you're going, even though there were economic hiccups in the mid-1920s, things looked good. Things looked positive. So remember, for Warren G. Harding, a return to normalcy. Remember, for Calvin Coolidge, it's the idea of the business of America is business. The 1920s was called the Age of Prosperity. It was called the Roaring Twenties. It was called the Jazz Age, after that unique American music that we're going to talk about. But it was also the decade of escapism and blame. You know, people were trying to think about who to blame for the Great War, who to blame for those 116,000 lives that were lost in America, as well as the millions of people overseas. And also on the heels of the flu epidemic that killed 40 million people worldwide, We're going to see that the 1920s was an age of emotion, whether it was disillusionment from the war or escapism and freedom as a result of the 19th Amendment. And, you know, jazz, as we'll see, like rock and roll later, is the music of rebellion. And we're going to see women and African Americans and other people take hold of these new freedoms and run with it during another name for the 1920s, which was the Roaring Twenties. Thank you.